This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, WMUK's Sevilla Man and MLive Kalamazoo reporter Malachi Barrett look at the county commission ahead of next month's election. But first, Republican Congressman Justin Amash is seeking his fifth term representing Michigan's 3rd District. It includes Calhoun, Barry, and Ionia counties, as well as most of Kent and part of Montcalm County. I sat down with Justin Amash last week at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in Battle Creek. Justin Amash, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Gordon.
So what would you like to do if you get another 2 years in the House?
I'd like to keep defending people's rights, serve as a continuing check on the executive branch, and try to improve the process in the House so that more people can be involved in amending legislation, in deliberating legislation, so we can better represent the people. And I think whether you have Republican leadership or Democratic leadership, there's a lot of improvement we can make there.
Well, explain a little bit. What's wrong with the process right now? Where does it go wrong?
It's totally closed right now. We have the most closed process in the history of Congress, in this current Congress. Not a single time during this whole Congress, the 115th Congress, have we been permitted to go to the House floor to offer an amendment. Every amendment has to be pre-approved by the Speaker of the House, brought to the Rules Committee, where you'll have some, essentially a show hearing. And then at the end of that hearing on your amendment, they'll tell you whether you can have it or you can't. It has nothing to do with anything you said there. What it has to do with is whether the amendment has a chance of passing and whether it will actually make substantive changes to the legislation. If they think that it will substantively change the legislation and has a chance of passing, the Speaker is going to shut it down and tell you you can't have it. And that's true whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. So this is the first Congress in the history of Congress where zero amendments have been allowed directly on the House floor. All of the amendments have to be pre-approved.
So this term of Congress, this particular term, you think has been more closed than the previous terms when you were
yes.
a member? I mean, this is firsthand experience for you.
Yeah, this is worse than previous terms. And, you know, we weren't happy with Speaker Boehner. We certainly had our concerns with Speaker Boehner. But compared to this, he was fairly open. And Speaker Boehner ran one of the most closed houses in the history of Congress himself. And that was fairly open compared to this. So I think that Speaker Ryan has not done a good job as Speaker. I've said that many times. I think it was a mistake to support him. And I'm not convinced that the Democrats, if they're in charge, will offer a better alternative. They'll probably continue this new tradition of closing down the entire House, which has gradually gotten worse over the past 30 or 40 years. But we have to do a lot better.
Let's talk a little bit about Saudi Arabia. You've introduced a bill related to the investigation into the murder of Khashoggi. Basically, this would halt arms sales to Saudi Arabia, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And until what point?
Well, the latest bill that we introduced would halt it permanently. So we're not asking for the Secretary of State to certify anything. I think most of us have enough evidence at this point that we shouldn't be sending arms to Saudi Arabia, selling them arms. We shouldn't be refueling their planes as they engage in this war in Yemen. And so I'd be for halting the arms sales regardless of the outcome here in this case, because I think this is just one more example of what's wrong with the Saudi regime. We're not going to base all our decisions just on this incident. I think this is just the latest one and maybe not even the most egregious one when you consider the war that's been going on for a long time and their overall human rights record.
The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report recently warning of some dire consequences in the near future if action is not taken. Should the U.S. be moving quicker to address issues of climate change?
I think we should engage with the world. I don't think it's a good idea for the U.S. to totally disengage from the world. Climate change, I think, is a real thing and that humans contribute to it. The question after that is how do we address it? And I certainly understand the reservations of many people when China doesn't have to take the same steps we do, for example, to address climate change when you have these world pacts that President Trump has withdrawn us from. At the same time, we should stay engaged with the rest of the world. We should talk to them about solutions, and we should talk about how we might contribute to solutions. And for me, one of the most important things you can do to ensure that our climate continues to get, that we're not affecting the climate in the same way, we're not harming our environment in the same way, is to improve the economic standards here and around the world. And that means making sure we're engaging in trade, that we are spreading the virtues of the free market system, which has helped this country become prosperous relative to the rest of the world. I think those kind of things will help us keep our environment clean, because when you have strong economies, you then have populations that are much more willing to devote some of their resources to clean environments. If you have very weak economies where people are doing very poorly, where people are suffering, those people don't have a lot of time to think about whether they're polluting the environment. They're just trying to get by day to day. And that's the case with so many people around the world today.
The tax cut bill that you voted for and eventually passed into law, is this working for the average American out there, or is it working more for people in the upper reaches of the income ladder?
It was a tax cut for everyone. When you look at the way the code is arranged, it's now more progressive than it was on the individual side. So actually a higher percentage of taxes are being paid by people at the higher end of the income scale. So it was intended to be a tax cut for everyone. It is a tax cut for everyone. There's no doubt that when some people pay a lot of taxes, a very high percentage, that in dollar amounts, they're going to get more dollars back. There's no doubt about that. That's the way just percentages work. But it was designed and intended and works in a way so that everyone gets a tax cut.
Should such a tax cut be passed at a time when the economy is good, if you're not going to also find a way to address spending or find other revenue to not drive up the deficit?
So you have to cut spending. When I look at a piece of legislation, whether it's a spending bill or a tax cut, I look at that bill and decide whether it is a net positive or a net negative for us. And I voted yes on the tax cut because I thought it was a net positive. And I vote no on the spending increases because I think that's a net negative. I think that if you had more people in Congress who took this approach of looking at each bill and doing what's right, you wouldn't have the debt problem you have today. You wouldn't have the deficit problem. They'd be opposing these spending increases. You can have tax cuts for the American people because we pay too high of taxes. You can have tax cuts. But then when the spending bill comes up, you should also vote to cut the spending. You shouldn't vote for a spending increase. And I think that's critically important.
Can you spell out exactly, you know, what areas you would cut? I mean, what are we spending too much money on? What, you know, would you say, here are the things we can do without in order to either maintain the current tax rate we have or even cut them further at some point in the future?
Well, I don't think we should have been increasing military spending. We spend way more than the rest of the world on defense and on our military, and a lot of that goes to civilian contractors. So we should be cutting spending there, or at least holding it even. There was no need to have these recent increases. And then we have to look at the largest areas of the budget and find ways to make them work long into the future. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So all of those areas have to be on the table. If not, you're not going to balance the budget. It's pretty silly for people to say, well, we're going to balance the budget, but we're not going to look at the four largest areas of the budget. You have to look at all of them, and that includes military spending. The problem you have is that Republicans want to increase military spending, and then you have others who want to increase other sorts of spending, social welfare programs and other things, and the agreement they come to is not really a compromise. It's in some sense a conspiracy. They conspire together to increase spending for everything, and that's how we get into this huge hole.
What's your thoughts on the idea of a missile defense system in Battle Creek? Is that a good idea?
I think if the Department of Defense decides that it's a good idea, then it's a good idea. Our decision should be based on defense needs and should not be based on any economic aspects. So I don't think it should be based on Does it bring jobs here or there? Because every city in the country is going to say, we need jobs. So I will always go to bat for my community, and I'll advocate on their behalf. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to advocate on the basis of creating jobs. I will advocate on the basis of this being the best location for our defense purposes. And if the Department of Defense agrees with that, then that's great. But I think there are too many members of Congress who try to base all of their decisions on, does it bring jobs to my district? And I don't think that's a good thing for our country.
What would be the sort of comprehensive immigration reform that could get your vote in the House?
You have to start with improving the legal immigration system. The biggest problem we have right now, I think, is that the legal immigration system does not work properly. And when you have a broken legal immigration system, you get more illegal immigration. Many of the people coming in now illegally were here legally, and they overstayed visas because they couldn't find a way to stay legally. So let's make the system easier. Let's bring people here legally. If you think about it, we'd probably have the same percentage of immigrants here. It's just that they'd be legal instead of illegal. And when you have legal immigrants in the country, they are much more likely to assimilate, much more likely to integrate, much more likely to learn English and pay all the taxes and do the other things, much more likely. Why should we have a whole population living underground and trying to hide from the government? We should ensure that they're able to be here legally. And then we can decide as a country what the appropriate rate of immigration is. But certainly we have been stifling legal immigration for too long. And as a result, we have a large illegal immigration population.
You mentioned earlier the possibility of the Democrats winning control of the House. We don't know what's going to happen as we sit here and talk. But the entire time you've been in Congress, Republicans have controlled the House. Do you think it would change your job much if the Democrats, you know, have the Speaker and control of the committees, et cetera?
Well, I'm used to working in the minority. I worked in the minority in the State House. And in Congress, I'm very independent. I'm, you know, not a party line voter. So I know what it's like to work with leaders who don't necessarily agree with you on everything. I think that if the Democrats were in charge, I would find many ways to work with them, particularly on some of the issues that I've worked on in the past, civil liberties issues, foreign policy issues. Just recently, for example, the legislation we spoke about earlier was introduced by Representative McGovern, and he's a Democrat. And that's Saudi Arabia legislation.
Right.
So I've worked with Democrats on a number of issues, and I'll continue to work with them. And if Jerry Nadler is the head of the Judiciary Committee, he and I have a good rapport, and we've worked together on many things, and we'll continue to do so.
On the night of the primary, when Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly found out he would not be the Republican nominee for governor, he told his supporters that they had to accept that this is President Trump's Republican Party. Do you think that's right?
Yes. Yeah, I think it is. I think the party has changed in many ways. And, you know, I've stayed the same. I'm going to be independent-minded. I'm a constitutional conservative. And I'm a libertarian. And sometimes I agree with the Republicans. Sometimes I agree with the Democrats. And that's the way it's always been, whether President Obama was in charge or President Trump. The party has changed, but, you know, these things have a way of ebbing and flowing, and things could change again in the future. You just don't know. But right now, I think that the strongest base of support is the president's base of support. And I think, you know, it is what it is.
Republican Congressman Justin Amash is running for re-election in Michigan's 3rd Congressional District. That includes Calhoun, Barry, and Ionia counties, as well as most of Kent and part of Montcalm County. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much.
The interview with Justin Amash was recorded last week at Western Michigan University's Kendall Center in Battle Creek.